The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UAP reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO, UAP, and abduction phenomenon. Our guest today is Stephen Bassett. Stephen is a political activist, disclosure advocate, and the executive director of PRG, Paradigm Research Group, founded in 1996 to end a government-imposed embargo on the truth behind extraterrestrial-related phenomena. He has spoken to audiences around the world about the implications of disclosure and the formal confirmation by heads of state of an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. He has lectured around the world on the political implications of UAP ET phenomena and given over 1,200 radio and television interviews. PRG's advocacy work has been extensively covered by national and international media. In 2013, PRG organized and conducted a citizens' hearing on disclosure at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. In November of 2014, PRG launched a two-year political initiative out of Washington, D.C. that injected the ET issue into the 2016 presidential campaign. Bassett has appeared in many documentary films, and his lectures and interviews are well represented on YouTube. And he has been on this show in the past. He was here a couple years ago, but he always has something new to impart. So, welcome back, Steve. I watched the congressional hearings on UFOs on television on July 26th. And I have to admit, I never thought I'd live to see the day. I wouldn't know where to start with the proceedings. So tell our listeners, if you would, what you feel were the most astonishing revelations to come out of that meeting.
It took 55 years to get another half-day hearing on the subject of, quote, UAP, which is now being called UFOs again.
It is.
I've noted. The stigma is now so gone that it's okay to say UFO. No one's concerned, whether you're a member of Congress or a journalist or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
You can say UFO now. Good. That's fine with me. UAP served its purpose. Made it a little easier for people to refer to the subject without fear that people might think they were odd.
Right.
It's the truth embargo's legacy. Mm-hmm. So the last one was 68. J. Allen Hynek was there. Stanton Friedman submitted a paper, I believe. James McDonald was there. He was embarrassed by one of the members of the committee.
Hmm.
1968, 55 years. Every effort to get a hearing, and there have been many, four witnesses, which have been accumulating, have all been rejected, failed, non-starters. For the very simple reason that whether one was in the know with respect to the truth embargo or simply aware of it, they understood that to bring in the kinds of witnesses that have been out there all this time to testify under oath before a substantial committee would probably end the truth embargo. And the policy of the government was that embargo would stand. And that embargo is what used to be, well, some people call the UFO cover-up. It's not a cover-up. That embargo is the policy of the United States government, that no matter how much evidence accumulates, no matter how many things are seen, no matter how many witnesses come forward, there is nothing there. It's one of the most bizarre, intriguing episodes in the history of any nation, frankly. And it will be studied extensively. So through a range of circumstances that have been going on for almost 6 years, it took 6 years. We had a major sort of change in the status quo of this issue in late 2017, December of 2017. Some stories came out in the New York Times. Some people came out. I call them the Magnificent Ten. Who would have worked in government, worked in military intelligence complex, to privately push this issue forward. And that process began in early 2018. And so 5 years of that, and a lot has taken place, I assure you. A committee in the Congress made the decision to hold a hearing. Now, there had been a couple of briefings. A subcommittee had a briefing, brought in some staffers, and then another subcommittee in the Senate brought in a staffer, Sean Kirkpatrick, and just asked them some questions. This is not a hearing, that is a briefing. This is a hearing with witnesses under oath, and it was the subcommittee of the House Oversight Committee that did it. Mm-hmm. It could have been any number of committees, but this is the one that decided to go first, and to their great credit. And that hearing was held on July the 26th, starting at 10 a.m. It was historical. It will be viewed as historical, a significant event in the history of the country. They had three witnesses. All three were known to us. The one had only become known publicly in early July, so only about 3 weeks prior. His name was David Grush, former major and intelligence officer with multiple entities. Mm-hmm. And they testified under oath. And in one way or another, during that testimony, which lasted about 2 hours, based upon direct answers they gave, such as, sir, is this the case, or is that true, or whatever, yes, or indirect, because many of the questions were deliberately posed in such a way that the questioner, committee member, knew ahead of time that they could not answer that question in public session. Mm-hmm. It was classified material that was not declassified and could only be discussed in private session with people who had the classification to hear it. Mm-hmm. They knew that would be the answer. And so repeatedly there were key questions that were asked in which particularly the most important witness, David Grush, simply stated, I cannot give you that information in a public session. We have to go into a private session or into what is called a skiff.
Yeah.
Sensitive.
That said, one of the questions was, do we have crash disks / alien bodies in our possession? And David Grush said yes.
Said yes to that because he'd already gone public on that.
Right.
So he could say yes to that. Yeah. Now, if he hadn't gone public via an article in a debrief and an interview to News Nation, he might have had to say, well, I cannot give you that information in the public arena, public session.
Mm-hmm.
But since he'd already said it, that was no longer a point. And now the question is, did he violate the law when he went public? On July the 5th with the article and the debrief and the interview with Ross Coulthart on News Nation, he might have. But he is a whistleblower, as he has stated.
Mm-hmm. It's out there now.
Yeah, and so he put it out there. He may have, but he's not going to be – he's not going to have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
He feels that the truth embargo, as I call it, is illegal. And therefore, and his efforts to have the issue addressed properly within government has not been sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, he felt, and more importantly, because of his efforts to properly address the issue in his role at the UAP task force and so forth, he was abused, threatened, harassed sufficiently that he had to go to an inspector general of the intelligence community to get relief. For these reasons, he went public. So whether or not he broke the law and violated classification, I think is now not particularly significant. And he's not going to be charged for it. So he answered yes to those questions. So he confirmed that we have crash vehicles of non-human origin. We have bodies of non-human origin. That is, of course, a really big deal.
Yeah.
And he confirms Roswell and a lot of other things. And then, to show you how this goes, when he was asked questions like, and there were many, do you know the names of the companies and or locations where this non-human technology resides? His answer was, I think in one case he answered, yes, but I cannot give you those details in public session.
Right.
Which means that he knows where these technologies are based on information he's gotten. Again, for those that are new to the issue, some of that went by them. Some of them didn't understand how significant it was, but those that understand the history of this issue, at the level of a former military officer, at the level of a subcommittee of a committee of the House of Representatives, the United States was just told, the world was just told, we have an extraterrestrial presence, we have craft that presence has disconnected to that presence, and we have the pilots of those craft, and so that was just basically told to the world. Now, again, that's not disclosure, and that's
going to be my next question.
The switches.
That was going to be my next question. Doesn't that count as disclosure?
No, it does. Not as I define it.
Yeah, but he didn't disclose that fact.
It's a pregnant revelation, but it's not disclosure. Yeah. It doesn't start the wheels turning, the doors opening. It doesn't galvanize media and institutions and people at the level that is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
That is only going to happen when a head of state confirms it.
Okay.
When a head of state confirms it, then that is disclosure, and that is going to be a big deal. And again, it's all of, like everything. The power of an event is based upon how many people are paying attention, how important they view it, and how many institutions are going to engage it. And so there are things that can happen that are roughly equivalent, and yet their historical impact is a fraction of one of the other. So to put it in perspective, the number of people that have watched that hearing is a good size. But they're having to judge it based upon the number of views on the online airing of it on the House channel and then and other accumulations. It's a sizable number. It's probably in the millions. The hearings that will end the truth embargo, which will be in front of the House Intel Committee almost certainly, I think will probably be watched by hundreds of millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
That, of course, is the magnitude that you would expect for something like this, and the size of that audience, amongst other things, will make it possible for the president of the United States, likely, as opposed to another country, to come forward and confirm it and say, yes, this is non-human technology. That's disclosure. And I assure you what happens after that will be many magnitudes greater than what we have seen since July 26th.
Now, if I heard you right, at the beginning of this, you said one of these members of the, one of those three witnesses was embarrassed at that hearing. Is that what you said?
No, I was referring to the hearing of 1968.
Oh, okay.
To putting things in perspective, when a very important scientist, Dr. James McDonald, was embarrassed by one of the members, just to kind of give you a sense. They kind of made fun of him. to give you a sense of where things are now as opposed to 1968.
Right.
It's taken 55 years to have a proper hearing for these people to be treated appropriately by the members of the committee, which they did a very fine job, and they treated them very well, and they kept it nonpartisan, asked very good questions. The credit for that goes to primarily to Congressman Tim Burchett and Congresswoman Anna Paulina Luna. But the other members, you know, were serious. So they did a credible and effort. They will get credit for it. They made some history, but that's just the opening act to the main act, which will be in front of the Senate Intel Committee almost certainly, and should be in September. If it's not, that is a mistake on the part of the Intelligence Committee.
I need to take a moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, station making waves. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm your host, David Twitchell. We're speaking with political activist and disclosure advocate, head of the Paradigm Research Group, and Mr. Stephen Bassett. Steve, it was by large a very non-political, non-partisan hearing. At the same time, there was one person on that, congressional board who I was quite disappointed in, Ms. Fox. Ms. Fox said to David Grush that this Kirkpatrick, I think it was his name from NASA, contradicted Grush in saying that, no, we don't have any crash disks or alien bodies. Was this a true statement? To which David Grush said, no, that's not accurate. And she said, I believe it is accurate. And then she wouldn't let him speak. Mm-hmm. He was trying to say something. She wouldn't let him speak and went on about how terrible a job the president did with the shooting down the Chinese spy balloon and yada, yada, yada. And then went, you know, that's my time. I'm done. In other words, she called him a liar. Well, he was under oath. So in my opinion, if she's going to call him a liar, charge him with that, you know, and bring Kirkpatrick in to testify against him under oath. Let's see who's lying.
I was there in the room, and essentially there was a little partisanship. There was two members that brought up the Chinese balloon thing because they felt that it would be a small dig at the president. But compared to the norm, the hearing was very significantly nonpartisan. There was just a touch of, and I assure you, that's nothing compared to what they're capable of. In terms of her statement about Kirkpatrick, the Kirkpatrick did contradict publicly and then wrote a letter after the hearing was over saying that he was very unhappy and he thought it was embarrassing. Now this gets into a whole nother area, and I'll talk about it.
Okay.
So she had a legitimate point that Kirkpatrick did contradict him. Then if she chose to agree with Kirkpatrick, fine. It's not really calling Grush a liar, but rather simply saying that his interpretation of this is we don't have anything. Grush is saying we do. That's not, that doesn't get in the territory of lying to the committee. And I assure you, the idea of pursuing that kind of stuff, that's the last thing we want to do. They're smart enough not to go there. This is history at such a level that it transcends all of politics, as far as I'm concerned. So the less politics, the better. I think they know it. So they're not going to start picking fights and getting into that. Her engagement was of a different type. It's not too troubling to me. It wasn't bothering me too much. So it's the overall committee's behavior that was fine. And right. So then she said a couple of things which were okay. So no big deal. However, what is sort of a big deal is that Kirkpatrick has written, he's gone public and challenged this testimony, challenged having a hearing at all. Mm-hmm. And it was a mistake on his part. I think I know why he did it. Sean Kirkpatrick is in a really tough spot. I don't envy him at all. He is put in charge of the entity that finally got named the Arrow, All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office. There were several other names that were tried out as this DOD office or cross-agency group, working group was put together, and he's the one in charge of it. Except this group is a placeholder. That's all it is. Arrow was not set up to go and research and find out what that phenomena is. The government already knows what that phenomena is.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons why they're not in a heavy rush to give it tons of money. That's why things are kind of moving slow. He is essentially, and I don't want to be too harsh here, but he's essentially the mayor of a Potemkin village. And it's not his fault. Not his fault at all. Setting up of Arrow, passing the legislation in 20, 21, 22, and now another one in 23 is on the way, holding briefings behind the scenes, which they've done, getting some classified reports from the DOD, which they have done. All of this is part of a process which is designed to end the truth embargo,
mm-hmm.
not find out what the phenomena is.
Right.
They have known about this phenomena and been studying it and spending billions of dollars on studying it and tracking and dealing with this issue since 1940s.
Mm-hmm.
So it's awkward and it's confusing. Why not just tell us? Why not just say, look, the president's come out and say, look, we've always known. Sorry about that. Let's move on. It's too big a deal. The history is too profound. There are too many institutions and people's careers and legacies involved. And the country is already somewhat twitchy and on edge. And distrust of government is a major problem in the United States. And so they understand that ending this embargo, it needs to be done in a way that demonstrates the proper propriety, probity. In other words, do the right thing, which they could have done in 48, could have done in 53, 64, 94. There were a number of opportunities, but they didn't do it. And so what they're doing is going through the process of what they should have done many years ago, as opposed to conducting a truth embargo that would last a lifetime. And so it's not a charade, but it is a process. I call it almost ceremonial, designed to improve the public's view of it, a view of them, to garner some public support, to reestablish some confidence, and institute some formality, but most importantly, give the president a obvious, transparent basis on which to go to the American people and say, yes, I am as convinced as you are that this phenomena is non-human, and I'm going to get more information to you, which if he simply just ended the truth embargo would not be the case. It's tricky. So are they misrepresenting? Are they lying? Yeah, they are. But they're doing it for higher purpose. They're trying to end a far, far bigger lie. And that's the truth embargo itself.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really awkward. And so the less time it takes to get this done, the better. Unfortunately for them, the potential for conducting this process in a relatively expeditious way has been undermined by historical events,
mm-hmm.
political events in the United States, a massive pandemic that killed millions and had huge economic impact, a new war in Europe that wasn't just any war. It was a war in which threatening the use of nukes was happening on an almost daily basis at times.
Right.
So this has been not an easy task to do under the circumstances, and yet they are still advancing it. So now 5 years on, so it's awkward, and it's going to and it's going to remain really awkward until they get it done. And now that the closing, the final moves of this chess game are before us, and they can be done quite easily. All that's necessary is for the Senate Intel Committee, which is led on this issue and is the highest ranking committee in Congress for dealing with matters of this level of national security, to hold a hearing of its own, far bigger than the one we just saw in the subcommittee of the House, with many more witnesses, 10, 12, 15, pick them. There are people coming forward now in droves, though most of that is behind the scenes, but there's plenty of people that are available. But already we know the number of witnesses that are available are enough to end this embargo and simply set the date, bring them in, put them under oath, and ask them a lot of important questions, and it's over. It could be over in September easily. The president could be confirming the extraterrestrial presence in September, and that is now in the hands, as far as I'm concerned. Assuming the president wants to step in unilaterally, which would be a big mistake, is in the hands of Mark Warner, the chairman of the Senate Intel Committee, a fine man, a great public servant, smart, and has been moving this thing forward in a very, very appropriate way. However, it can't be delayed any further. It's got to call that hearing.
Okay, I've been keeping my eye on some of the questions that have been asked. Maybe you would know, because I certainly don't. Has President Biden been asked this question? Has the meeting, the Oversight Committee meeting, been broached with the president by the press or by anybody publicly?
President Biden has been briefed about all this, I assure you.
No, but has he spoken publicly?
No.
Has he answered a question? Has he been asked the question? What do you think about that committee?
Yet. And he doesn't want to be asked. But
oh, I understand that.
his spokeswoman, Trumpierre, she was asked a question relating to Grush's emergence on July the 5th, and she dodged it. They do not want to be answering these questions. The process of these hearings is so critical to the president being able to end this embargo in a minimally nonpartisan way, in a responsible way. Without those hearings, then the president is in a position that almost anything he says is going to cause a problem for somebody. It's going to hang this thing out. He can't, unless he's prepared to take it home. In other words, if he starts getting asked some questions, if he doesn't somehow stay away from the issue, if he doesn't somehow dodge this thing, he's going to literally have to disclose ahead of schedule, in a sense, and they don't want that. So it's a tough situation. It is awkward. Now there's enough going on in the world, and multiple indictments of a former president. I mean, that every day another indictment. There's plenty out there that it can keep the media preoccupied. But let me tell you, I'm following the media on this. 1,000 stories have been written since Grush came public in July the 5th. 1,000 easily, maybe 2,000. I'm trying to keep up with the high end English language stuff, but I can't follow the foreign press. But this thing is a pretty big story. It is going to continue to mature, and it may eventually go nuclear. And what I mean by that is that when a story gets to a certain point where enough media are aware of it and enough media are making queries and getting insight, at some point it goes nuclear and turns into what we have commonly referred to as a media feeding frenzy.
Is it just one of those things after 10 days the public forgets about
it? No, that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is the media is well aware of that. What to one degree or another, one of the reasons being that people like myself have been telling them this for 20 some years. Right. This is the biggest news story in history. There are low hanging fruit Pulitzer prizes for a lot of people out there. It doesn't get any bigger than this. And so their job, their raison d'etre, is to break big stories. Not just inform us, they want to do that, but breaking big stories was what really keeps them working hard and long hours for not that much money. Mm-hmm. And so this is the biggest news story in history. And so the idea that they're going to let this drop at this point, no, it's going to continue to mature until it explodes. That is why that hearing has got to be held in September and get this thing done. Get it to the point where the president can confirm the ET presence, and then the media can go as crazy as it wants to. But all of the players and all of the institutions that are connected to this issue in the present and in the past will be relatively freed up to speak honestly, as opposed to having to lie endlessly for national security, of course. And so that is in the hands right now of Mark Warner. He's going to make everybody's life easier if he just gets that hearing done, brings in the big witnesses I know are ready to testify, and let the world hear many Grushes under oath with distinguished military careers telling them face out, front, oh, there is an extraterrestrial presence.
So what is Grush's credentials?
Oh, he served 18 years in the military. He was involved in many of the intelligence entities like geospatial. He was made a key player, one of the key players initially in the UAP task force. His career is completely known to the DOD, to the DOD inspector general, to the intelligence community inspector general. His credentials are outstanding.
Do you know if, because of David Grush, other whistleblowers are coming out of the woodwork at this
time? Yeah, they are. There's rumors everywhere. And remember, there was legislation, this last National Defense Appropriation Act, you had legislation put in there by Warner providing clear statements that people coming forward within government as part of this process of the Congress getting up to speed had better not be bothered. They had better not be harassed. There will be consequences. He even put a paragraph in the Senate version of the bill stating that people who were bothered or harassed or damaged in any way for doing what we are asking them to do, that person could sue the individuals involved, even sue the U.S. government in general. That was pulled out of the bill. It didn't make it into the final language, but it didn't matter. That language was up on the Senate site as proposed language for the Senate version for some time, sending a clear message to a lot of people throughout government. We are serious about this. Don't interfere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever your reasons, don't interfere. And so that loosened clearly the wrappings on this truth embargo. And so more people are going to come forward. So Lord knows how many people are in one stage of a revelatory process in which they're trying to get their story forward in an appropriate way. Lord knows. But I can tell you this, the number of people still living that have meaningful testimony related to their personal experiences and work and observations is in the thousands.
So they were supposed to have a secret hearing after this hearing. You know, he said, like Grush said, I can only tell you in a skiff. They couldn't get a skiff. I don't know why, but I guess they did. Did they ever get an area where they could talk?
My understanding is they didn't. They weren't able to get a skiff, which is sensitive, compartmentalized information facility, I believe. Before the hearing, but I think they were able to get access afterwards. I heard that they were interviewing people, I assume Grush and others, mm-hmm. 4 hours after that hearing was over, because the hearing was over about mid-afternoon, right? I mean around lunchtime. So I think they got that. So they got some additional information. The Congress of the United States has been getting classified information, briefings, private briefings, both formal and informal, as well as reports, classified reports from the DOD, for now 4 years. Mm-hmm. And so the members of the Intel committees and members of the Armed Services committees and apparently even the Appropriations committees, their heads are filling up with information about this issue, a lot of which is not known to the public, filling up. And so the idea that they're all going to get amnesia or forget about this or just drop it. No. We are in the final weeks, hopefully, of the truth embargo. The Congress is now had a is going to be involved. They're going to be involved in many levels. So their role is being fulfilled. The DOD has been cooperating for years now. Their role is being fulfilled. The services, not so much, but the DOD basically stands in for the services, so they don't have to get into it because it's messy. That's okay. And then the White House is doing its job by not getting involved, by staying out of it, by staying back and allowing the process to unfold so that the president will be able to step in it at an appropriate time. And it will not look like a political grandstanding. It will be fully justified, and the doubters and the worst of the skeptics out there will probably be silent, and the president can simply state, yes, I can confirm. Clearly, we are not alone, and you want to know a lot more about that, and I'm going to work hard to see that you know a lot more about that. That's what has got to happen. That's what we've been heading for years now. So let's hope that it happens soon before this next extremely expensive and likely extremely hyper-partisan campaign, presidential year campaign gets underway. Because if we can get disclosure, it might just make it bearable.
Very good. Let me take one more moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm host David Twitchell, and I'm speaking with Mr. Stephen Bassett, the head of PRG, Paradigm Research Group. What's your website there, Steve?
ParadigmResearchGroup.org.
Well, that's easy enough.
Long name, yeah, but that's what it is. You can subscribe to a free email list there. There's a print media archive under resources, which is a vast resource for anybody, particularly if you're a journalist or a member of Congress. Mm-hmm. So I'm on social media. I have a number of Facebook pages, but the most important social media right now for activism is Twitter or X or whatever the hell they want to call it. Please follow me at Steve Bassett. You can also search on Paradigm Research Group and my page will come up. There is another remnant page with my name on it. Ignore that. You want to go to the one where I've got 30,000 followers. But I'm following about 1400 people myself. I'm really using Twitter to follow this. You need something like that. Without it, there's no way to keep up with the day-to-day activities. So that's happening. And I've got some projects coming up. I'm going to be speaking at a very important conference, a massive event in November, November 10 to 12, which is going to be held by a 501c3 organization, which has held some very significant events around the world, called Disclosure Fest, disclosurefest.org. And that is going to be at the Luxor Hotel in Las Vegas. Huh. They have booked, I think, about half the rooms there for attendees. That's about 2,000. Right there, as many as 3,000 to 4,000 people may be staying at the hotel, but the attendance may exceed that substantially. It's going to be a major event. There's going to be a substantial UAP disclosure representation there, such as Richard Dolan, myself, and others, but a lot of other interesting topics and subjects, which are, you know, favorites of people that are viewing this world with an open mind. Big event. Stairway to the Stars, Luxor Hotel, November 10 to 12. And then I will be speaking at the World Ufology Conference in Mexico City. This is, they've held a series of these around the world. This will probably be the biggest one by far, December 1 to 3. The website is up. I don't know if they've selected the main hotel yet, but Mexico, probably the citizens of Mexico probably have the highest level of awareness and interest per capita than any country on the planet. And Mexico City has 25 million people. So do the math and imagine how big that conference will be. And consider the possibility that both of these conferences, and there's a couple of others, and you can find those on my website under upcoming conferences, under resources. They may be conducted in the post-disclosure world. And so imagine the level of energy at these events if myself and my colleagues are speaking to sizable audiences after the world has finally gotten the formal confirmation that we are not alone, which brings up another point, folks. Any conferences you're thinking of going later this year, certainly after September and next year, you better book your rooms now.
Mm-hmm.
I assure you, because if things break, those rooms will be gone in days.
Right. I believe it. Well, let's talk about the elephant in the room that was not mentioned at this hearing. And I, as wonderful as that hearing was, and you know, all of these congressional committee hearings, it never gets mentioned. Now, we know that it's been admitted that we have UAPs or probably extraterrestrial bodies, etc. We know they're visiting this planet. It's been admitted. But what about alien abductions? Why haven't they broached that subject?
Broaching the very fact that they're just here was a monumental task from their point of view.
Agree.
Difficult. Because, again, you got journalists with careers and politicians with careers and functionaries with careers and families and everything else. And the embargo, which isn't their fault. Mm-hmm. The Washington Post didn't create the embargo. The Washington Post has just gone along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a case of walking first, running later, or, you know, you got to walk before you can run. The abduction issue is easily the most difficult issue that we will address post-disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be many things we will be addressing post-disclosure without question. Every nation will have to do this. And it is going to be tough. But it will happen, and it will be addressed. And I keep telling my contactee friends, don't worry. You will be quite, I think, satisfied with the attention that abduction will get once disclosure has taken place.
And but, I'll bet they'll say to you, when is this happening?
Again, I've told you, disclosure should happen in September. It needs to happen in September.
No.
He needs to hold the hearings, and if he does, it'll happen in September. And once disclosure happens, you're in the day you're in the post-disclosure world. And right. and the day after disclosure, the contact issue is no longer is not nearly the problem that it presents in the lead up to disclosure, in the process to get there.
Okay.
It is just so difficult, so brutal, so complicated that trying to fit that through the door or into the mind of a member of Congress. And as it happens, and any editor of any paper practically is just too much.
Mm-hmm.
It's too far. And so sometimes, and this is true of all activism. This is true of all activism. You can accomplish what you can accomplish. If you try to do too much too soon, you fail. And we don't want to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And so the civil rights movement, for instance, there are a lot of people in that movement that wanted to see absolute justice and equality happen. Boom, that's it. And overnight. And that would have not worked.
Yeah.
What they had to do was to get a prize and then get another prize and move forward. Right. And the first key prize in the civil rights movement was, I believe, the Civil Rights Act of 64, followed by the Voting Rights Act. So it's the same thing here. We need to get disclosure first. And then we can address the incredibly complicated and much more difficult to define, or not define, but certainly engage, the matter of alien abduction or alien contact, whether it's invited or not, in the post-disclosure world, along with a lot of other things. And I think, and I know that there are quite a few contactees that I know, and by and large, they understand this. They're okay. They're down with it. They get it. Now, if the longer that the truth embargo lasts, their frustration will grow. And if post-disclosure, suddenly there's still this huge resistance to discussing it, and people are acting stupid about it, well, they're going to raise a stink, and I'll be right there with them, raising as much a stink as I can. But I don't think that's going to be the case. In fact, here's the way you look at it. The world will be told, maybe in September, formally, by their head of state, their president, their prime minister, their dictator, whatever the hell. Yeah, you're not alone. There's extraterrestrials here. And very obviously, everyone is going to want to know everything that they're willing to tell them about the extraterrestrials.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's a pretty interesting subject, right?
But hasn't this been done in other countries like Colombia?
What do you mean? What has what been done?
Their head of state has...
No,
it hasn't.
No head of state has ever confirmed it. There have been some countries where they set up some research in their military. Down in, I think, a couple South American countries allowed a sort of a research thing to develop within the Air Force, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
There was actually a Senate hearing in Brazil where some people came in, testified to the Brazilian Senate.
Brazil,
but no head of state has confirmed the extraterrestrial presence. Okay. And so once that's out the door, people are going to want to know about the ETs. Well, if you want to know about ETs, you know the best source you can go to is the people that have met them, right? Mm-hmm. And some Air Force pilot that flew by a craft at like 500-600 miles an hour, not going to be able to tell you very much, but somebody that's being abducted for the last 25 years can tell you a lot. And so guess what? Not only is the abduction issue going to be addressed pretty quickly post-disclosure, but contactees are going to be in tremendous demand in all levels of society, certainly levels of journalism, the neighborhood, mm-hmm. family dinners. So you're going to go to a family dinner, and if it's known that you're a contactee, that's all they're going to want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're not going to want to fight about this and that and what cousin so-and-so did or what. They're going to want to talk to you. Mm-hmm. And so you will be the star of the family dinner. Post-disclosure. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to happen. And so, if anything, the contactees need to prepare not to be ignored again, but to be deluged with interest, demands, requests, and prepare how to handle that. Hopefully they can handle it and deal with it in a way that's not too disruptive to their life. Now, there are a few fakes out there that will be thrilled to be able to tell you all about the ETs.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll all be nonsense, but there are enough researchers and enough knowledge. There's enough knowledge out there that I think it will not be that difficult for those that know this issue well to point out that particular source of information is bogus.
Yeah, I think I've had quite a few real deals, shall we say, on my show, and pick their brains about what's going on with the abduction experience. But you talk about being prepared. How should the public prepare for a formal contact event?
Pay attention. A formal disclosure event.
Right.
Okay. Now, contact event's another matter. But when I say, what I call open contact, that's another matter. I'll mm-hmm. answer both questions.
Yeah, please.
Anything they can learn between now and hopefully October.
Mm-hmm.
God, there's plenty. I mean, you say, well, are there any, you know, any videos I could watch to prepare? Yeah, there's several thousand, you know, already up on YouTube. You can watch nothing but videos about this for the next 2 months as you prepare for disclosure. Are there books to read? Thousands. So Obviously, it'd be helpful if you choose well, but you know, you can always just go online and Google 10 best documentaries about ETs, 10 best UFO docs, 10 best books, whatever the hell. You know, we have ways now to sort of triage the better material. You don't grab stuff at random, but as much as one can educate themselves, that'll help. Keep their mind open, that'll help. Don't buy into the scary and the more scary scenarios, and don't buy into the threat language. Too Day. Much. I'm sorry.
Independence Day.
Yeah, that's good. That's out there, and it's going to be out there. I wouldn't buy into it. Mm. Just keep an open mind. The national security emphasis on this is more about being able to move it along and get the attention it needs from Congress and journalists, and less about the actual threat that these ETs pose. It's notable, and I was very pleased to see this, is that at one point in the hearing on the 26th, one of the members, one of the later questioning from one of the members of the Republican side, along the lines of the national security and threat issue, which had come up. I think it was a very matter-of-fact question. Is the presence of this non-human technology and non-humans an existential threat to the human race, to the planet? It's a pretty straightforward question.
Yeah, it's clear. A good question.
Okay.
It's a fair question.
All three of these witnesses gave the correct answer.
Which is?
Potentially. Mm-hmm. There is a big difference between something being a threat and something being a potential threat. When you go camping, all the bears in the woods are a potential threat. But if you're in your tent and a bear walks into that tent, that is an actual threat. Okay? The difference is non-trivial. And so there's a lot of instances where people just don't make that distinction. The ETs have and always will be a potential threat, a potential serious threat, even a potential existential threat. There are all kinds of potential threats out there. But that is not the same thing as being a threat. And most of the people that I deal with are of the view that the ETs are not a threat. Now,
agreed.
That does mean that the confirmation of their presence isn't going to create disruption. I mean, all change creates disruption. And that there may be some upside and downside and what have you. Some people are going to make some money, some are going to lose some money. But that's, and so in a sense, there's a threat that the post-disclosure world is going to create some disruption and somebody might be affected. That's not the threat that we, that's standard. That's the way the world is. The threat that is always being referred to as the threat of them doing violence to humans and to our planet. And the consensus right now is, I think, overwhelmingly no.
Well, don't you think that would have already happened if that were the case?
That's a reasonable point, of course. It would have already happened. But let's face it, there are nations that exist side by side for decades and decades and then suddenly decide to go to war. So one has to be reasonable. I don't want to be unduly strident about this. We should always be aware that could happen, it could change, and pay attention. But it's important that, and this is something that I can get worked up about, but not today, is that whatever potential threat the extraterrestrial presence presents to the human race, every single member of the human race should know about it. Right. And that means every single member of the human race should know that we are not alone and that we have an extraterrestrial presence. And therefore, whatever threat is implicated by that, every person has the opportunity to consider it and the idea that only a select few have the need to know, the right to know, or can handle the truth is nothing but a piece of nonsense propagated as propaganda to support the truth embargo's policy. And that policy absolutely cannot end soon enough.
Right. And if they did decide to be hostile, take over, what could we do about it?
Hide.
Hide is right. Hide is right. It's just like Favor and the other gentleman said, the pilot, would you be able to fight back if they attacked you? Absolutely not. Nothing we could do about it.
And that's not some pilot from the 1950s. That's an F-16 pilot.
Yeah.
No, we can't fight that. And that's offensive to our fundamental nature.
Mm-hmm.
Humans instinctually have a powerful sense of preservation, survival, not only themselves, but their family. It's built into our genes, been developing for millions of years. And so the idea of being defenseless absolutely goes against our core genetic structure. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons why some people simply have a terrible time flying, whereas they drive around the city in their cars and they're fine, but you stick them in an airplane, they go to pieces. And the reason is that when you're in an airplane, you're virtually defenseless. There's just nothing you can do. If it has a collision, that's it. There's nothing you can do. It's done. You're over. It's absolute. You have no control. The pilot has a little control, some control, a lot of control. You have nothing. And so for some people, that is very disturbing, and they can't get over it. Yet when they're driving around in their car in the city or on the highways where the risk of getting hurt is far, far greater, they don't have that same panic, because they have some control, right? They have some control of that car, and they can steer out of the way or whatever, and so they're fine.
Yes.
Well, guess what? With respect to the ET stuff, when you know enough, it's like being in an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what the ETs want to do here, you have no control other than hiding. That's it. And that's the way it's true. We're not being picked on here. That is true for every single non-faring, non-spacefaring civilization in the galaxy.
Okay. Right?
They have no defense against an interstellar species until they become interstellar. And then they do have the potential for defense, but they also have the potential for offense. And so guess what? It is my contention, and I love talking about this. I hope I'm right. I think I am, that at the point that any technological civilization starts to get close to the ability to solve the travel problem in our galaxy, star to star, interstellar, there's going to be an intervention. Mm-hmm. That's when ETs that are already interstellar are going to intervene. Not all of them, but a few selected ones or whatever are going to be the ones that are going to kind of intervene, because logically, you do not want a brand new star-faring civilization that's got issues, and boy, has the human race got issues, to head on out into your territory,
right,
and cause trouble. So you don't have to intervene before that. Up until that point, they are no threat to you. You can do what you want. You can cruise on down, hang out, build pyramids, be treated as gods, whatever. But when they approach interstellar, and we are approaching interstellar travel, we are closing in on the equations. We're closing in on how it's done. Their very presence has stimulated that for 70-some years. And the very fact that plenty of scientists are fully aware they're here and know it can be done has helped drive an intense effort to figure out how they do it. Not just star to star, but just antigravitics by itself.
Mm-hmm.
So we're approaching that. And that is why I believe the process underway is not casual. It's not incidental. It is directly connected to this benchmark in our history where we're about to go interstellar, and therefore we're going to have to deal with them. We're going to have to deal with them openly, and they're going to have to deal with us openly. And there's going to have to be some understandings. And those understandings will take place in the open contact era, which I believe will occur within a year to 2 years after disclosure, which should happen in September, which puts open contact in 2025, which is just up around the corner, right? So that's what keeps me going and excited about the future, even at my greatly advanced age.
Mr. Stephen Bassett, I want to thank you so much for joining us. I hope we can do this again sometime.
Absolutely. My pleasure, as always. And again, what can I say? You got the right name for the podcast, my friend. Milk it for all it's worth.
Have a good one.
All righty.
And I want to thank you, the loyal listener. Go to WHFR's homepage, scroll down to We Are Not Alone, and click on the headline, which will take you to where you can find my website with all the archive shows. Or click on the Talk Shows button, then the We Are Not Alone button for the latest show archives. And please join me the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UAP phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.